There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, as a local hero belts out. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. Just very quickly, because this hour is a packed hour, we're going to be looking at that game against Liverpool, the disappointing 3-1 defeat. Could have been so different with the way Newcastle started. The sun was shining in Liverpool. Well, it wasn't shining on Newcastle because it was not the brightest of results. We will be talking to Roberto Rojas, a South American football expert, and delighted to say, of course, we will be doing the opposition view when Newcastle take on Brighton this Saturday. We'll be talking to Brian Owen, sports reporter for the Argus. Just very quickly, if anyone has seen Sean Wade, get in touch with us, 0208 70 2558, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. He was meant to be here tonight. The man has not turned up. Check your pubs. Check everywhere because he's not turned up. We're wondering where he is for all his Newcastle views. We're hoping he'll be with us, knowing Sean, he'll turn up at 7:58 this evening and the show will be over. Well, we are in safe, capable hands because it is Aaron, it is Laurie. We are talking everything where the Toon Army are concerned. We have to start with that disappointing result. Aaron, it was a great, great start. When Newcastle went 1-0 up, did you think, hang on, we got that result against Spurs, that was away, we beat them 1-0, is it on the cards again?
I think there was probably about 30 seconds where I thought, you know what, I was sat at work as well, and all morning I'd been given it the, oh, I know, you know what, I think we're going to nick something today, getting laughed out of the office, and for that 30 seconds I thought, you know what, I'm going to be, you know, smiling after this, but, you know, I mean, I think as soon as Liverpool got their first goal back, you knew that it was probably just going to be all one-way traffic, and, you know, they would probably do well even snatch a draw, but I mean, at least they give the away fans something to celebrate for the first 10 minutes, I suppose.
Well, it was an unbelievable goal from Yetro Williams. It was a cracking goal. The move, you know, just firstly, the counter-attacking, so fluid, so quick, you know, in three passes, Newcastle already there. Finished it with absolute clinical style. Laurie, was you thinking, you know, this is the football that we've been asking, wanting to see. We can play it under Steve Bruce, although it's been patches. Are we up for this today? Can we get it done?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I know you always say that, but I do feel like we scored too early. And when you're playing such a top team, like when it's tight, it's a little bit different. When it stays 0-0 for longer and longer, you think, oh, maybe we could nick it 1-0. But when we've scored, then at that point, you're really expecting Liverpool to score. As you say, it was a great goal. I don't know if Jetro Williams has ever done that in his career. It was absolutely quality.
I like that you've called him Jetro when you know I've called him Yetro, because we were undecided on this, Aaron. Is it Yetro or Jetro?
I think I'd say Jetro.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying as well. But to be fair, you also said Williams, so it doesn't matter. You got both names wrong. Mm. Anyway, no, but all I'm saying is, I actually don't think it was completely beyond us when Liverpool went 2-1 up. There was that incredible chance for Kraft, who at very least should have put that on target. And to be honest, what frustrates me more is I think we missed an opportunity in terms of, I know it's easy to say that against Liverpool, they're a top team, but I wanted to see us like just be a little bit higher up the pitch, a little bit more positive, because Liverpool, as was showed last night against Napoli, and I'm not comparing our forward line to Napoli by any stretch of the imagination, but put them under a little bit of pressure and they can make mistakes. And I think with Liverpool, particularly this season already, some teams are just treating them like they're absolutely invincible. And, you know, there are clearly ways to get to them. And although, you know, you can't expect a result against Liverpool, I do think that if we'd been a little bit more positive in that second half, we would have had a much better chance at getting a draw.
I think you're completely right, because Liverpool have looked vulnerable, you know, Southampton, but they're getting results and they're not in top gear yet. They haven't peaked yet. But Newcastle, I felt like, yes, Liverpool were worthy winners, but Newcastle had their moments. They obviously scored that goal, but in so many other moments in that game, Aaron, it could have gone the other way. We know football, you know, is so easy. It hangs on that knife edge, doesn't it? But there was a moment when Newcastle, they won the ball. Oxlade-Chamberlain, he was a slight heavy with his touch, gave the ball to Newcastle. Newcastle could have then gone on the counter-attack, maybe done something. Atsu lost the ball. Liverpool like that, they go 2-1 up. In those crucial moments, it could have been the other way, couldn't it?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think with Bruce's tactics of when we're going away from home and sitting so far deep, there needs to be more emphasis on then counter-attacking, because there were so many times in that game where Almiron was bursting out of the box with a ball and he had no one around him. Joe Linton's holding the ball up at 40 yards away from goal. Nobody's around him. So, I mean, yeah, obviously that Atsu, you know, if Atsu hadn't lost the ball and, you know, Newcastle go on the attack, it's different. But I think over the 90-minute period, especially like you say, with Liverpool being vulnerable this season, only keeping, I think, one clean sheet in the league so far, you know, there should have probably been more attacking impetus, especially still at 2-1. I mean, I know Firmino's came on second half and changed the game, but for me, it felt like once it was 2-1, Kraft's obviously had a brilliant chance, which he should have probably done better with. But apart from that, it wasn't like Spurs, where I thought we were actually going forward and creating. I think a lot of times, you know, looked isolated up top.
Let's talk about Steve Bruce's tactics, because he played that flat back five, Laurie. What did you make of the way he did set up Newcastle facing Liverpool? Were you pleased? Was it like, well, we are playing the European champions, this is the way you should go about it, we got a result at Spurs? Were you pleased with how we set it up?
Well, I think one of the things with Newcastle is, weirdly for Newcastle at the minute, our sort of the best strength and depth we have is in central defence, essentially. So we've got pretty decent players there that you know, we kind of actually want to use. And obviously, when you are playing a team that are that good at, in an attacking sense, and they really, you know, couldn't break us down that well before Firmino came on. I know Mane's goal was great, but that was kind of down to a little bit of a mistake and, you know, just complete composure from Mane. So I kind of completely understand why you would play formations like that. But the problem is the way we've been playing is we're playing so deep that it's almost like the defensive line creates a mindset for the rest of the team where we are defending rather than playing football. And I find that quite frustrating when clearly there are players there. Like, Joe Linton's not just a big man who can hold the ball up. He does that really well, but, you know, he can play a pass. We've seen him do that. Obviously, you know, he's scored one goal this season, but that was really well taken. And I think he's going to be a lot more of a threat in the 6-yard box than you would think. So I just find it's hard to say. I can't say that I don't approve of it, because I understand why you would play that way. And there is strength and depth there in defence. But I think we especially have to find a way to bridge the midfield with the attack and not be as deep as we are.
Aaron, no team wants to lose. Every team wants to come away with 3 points, if not come away with one. You know, try to get that draw, especially when you are away from home playing the European champions. But are we seeing enough glimpses here from Newcastle, enough positive patches to think, well, if we can put this together, if we can be more consistent and play some football, maybe there is a little bit of hope as the season continues? And also, you talk about that golden chance for Kraft there. He has to score, because he didn't even get it on target. Now, the minimum for me there, he needs to score. You know, on target isn't even enough in that situation. You know, chances at Anfield, you know, they're not coming around all the time. He has to do better there, doesn't he?
100%. I think it might have been the Norwich game or the Watford game, one of the two, where Kraft was in an identical position and he's done the exact same by blasting it over. So, I mean, maybe it's a confidence thing. Maybe he's not, you know, settled yet. I mean, he is a right back, and we haven't really seen how much of an attacking player he is. But I think there just needs to be more emphasis across the entire team to attack. As I've touched on, there just wasn't enough going forward on Saturday. And I think that when the game's neck and neck and tight, like it has been for a lot of the games this season, you know, Watford, Arsenal, Liverpool at a stage, Spurs, we are going to get punished by not finishing. And, you know, it's all well and good sitting deep and playing five at the back and defending, but as Liverpool showed, there's only so long you can do that without conceding. So I think we've seen glimpses, but for me, I think we're going to be struggling this season if we don't sort out how to attack away from home.
Well, you've shown glimpses. Hopefully you can show some more. No easy games in the Premier League, Laurie. Obviously, every team you face are going to be up for it. It's going to be a hard challenge. But you have played Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal. Not the easiest starts, you know, 5-6 games in. Now, you know, could Newcastle maybe go on a little bit of run? And has the feeling changed under Steve Bruce from day one to now where we are game day 6?
I'll come to the second bit after, but I think the thing that's frustrating is, as you say, we've had those fixtures. We managed to get that result against Tottenham, and then we drew against Watford 1-1, which is quite a, you know, underwhelming performance. That's the sort of result that you need to build on and then go into that game that you should be winning, like, with those teams in and around you and put in a good performance. And obviously, had we won both of those games and then played Liverpool and lost, that's, we've already kind of outdone ourselves there, and you can't expect to go to Liverpool and win. So now, in my opinion, this Brighton game is really actually a massive game, even though it's early in the season, even though there's plenty more points to be had. And, you know, there are a lot of teams that look defensively fragile in the Premier League this season. So, you know, I think there are plenty of teams that we could beat if we go about it in the right way. Having said that, games like Brighton, and bearing in mind Brighton have had a few results already this season, I think there's such a huge psychological aspect about coming into a Premier League season. And when you get to sort of Christmas, whether you see yourself as being in a relegation scrap or whether you see yourself a little bit above that, does make a huge difference. And I think early on, to win these sort of games against Brighton, if we put in a convincing display, score 2 or 3 goals, that would just be worlds better than if we draw 1-1 and we could be lucky, we could lose, we could, you know, you want to feel convinced by your team at this stage of the season, in my opinion.
Well, the Premier League is in its early stages, very early on. We can't judge yet, but we know all fans judge. You know, we're thirsty to judge our team. After this games, we wanted this many points. But Aaron, do you think it's a case of, it's still time, let's wait and see? Because as Laurie just said there, people throw around very quickly, this game is a 6-pointer. Do you feel it's a 6-pointer? Is it that important this early on?
I mean, I was asked this yesterday on a different show, and I said...
You've been on a different show talking Newcastle?
Just as a guest, not as a regular.
You make sure that's not a regular thing, my friend. You find yourself on a ban.
But yeah, no, I was asked this yesterday, and I said, I don't like... you know, calling September matches, October matches, must-win games. But I hate to say it, but it is this Saturday, purely because if we don't get a result against Brighton, we're already in the bottom three. The next four games, you know, it's Manchester United, Chelsea, Leicester, Wolves in some order. We fail to beat Brighton this Saturday. That's the next four games on paper. You're going to be lucky to get a win in any. You get to, you know, sort of end of October, November, and you're starting to look adrift. We saw it under McLaren that they waited far too long to get rid. You know, we were far too adrift for, you know, for Rafa to save us. So, look, I think if Brighton turn us over on Saturday, then I think it's probably the start of looking a bit worried, purely because of just the run of fixtures. And, you know, it's probably going to get to a stage where if we're cut off by Christmas, I think that's probably it for Bruce.
Well, is it a 6-pointer? What do you think? You can tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Of course, later on in the show, we will talk all about that game with Brighton on Saturday, and we will get the opposition view from Brian Owen, sports reporter for the Argos. But if it is a 6-pointer, Newcastle need their players to start shining. One of them, Almiron, and next we'll be talking to Roberto Rojas, who is a South American football expert.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. We were just talking about that disappointing defeat to Liverpool on the weekend. 3-1 winners there. And we'll also be looking at the game with Brighton a little bit later. But just a very quick Champions League score update. Tottenham were 2-0 up and cruising in match day one of the Champions League. They travel to Greece today to play Olympiakos. Well, Olympiakos, they've decided to make a fight of it. And they have made a fight of it. It's 2-2. go Olympiakos. Anyway, we will keep you up to date across all the scores in that one. There is the early kickoff in the Champions League. The later kickoffs are at 7:45 or 8:00 this evening. Now, though, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Roberto Rojas, a South American football expert. He knows everything, all about the South American football, MLS. He is the man in the know. We want to know about Almiron because Newcastle fans, they are patiently waiting for him to explode. Roberto, why has it not really kicked off for Almiron so far in the black and white of Newcastle? We know he scored in the week on international duty. We're still awaiting his first Newcastle goal. Is it coming?
Hi, guys. More than anything, thank you for so much for having me on. Yeah, it's a weird one. And, you know, like you said, he did score in his first international goal ever for his national team in Paraguay, albeit it was against Jordan, who, with all due respect, isn't exactly the biggest rival to face. But, hey, goal's a goal. It's a weird one. I think it's a really weird one because you look at how well he did, in a way, when he first came into Newcastle under Rafa Benitez. You know, he was obviously a player that Rafa scouted and, you know, wanted him on the team. And you saw that the system that he came into worked well for him, and it worked well for all of the players around him, be it Rondon, Perez. You know, it worked well. That's kind of one of the reasons why Newcastle was able to survive last season. This season, it does. That was one of the big questions, I think. You know, looking at the player now who is getting essentially his first season behind his belt, where last season he came in only halfway through the season. I think for Almiron's case, it's a weird one. You know, Steve Bruce, I think, is still trying to tinker in with a team that it looks like it's going to work, but we don't know. Albeit, you know, one good result against Spurs a few weeks ago maybe showed a bit of flash in the pan, but in regards to Almiron, yeah, it does seem a bit frustrating for him to come in and, you know, he's played, what, 15 games, I think, already in the Premier League, maybe a bit more, and he has yet to score a goal. And, you know, mind you, he's not a goal scorer. I think many people have to realize that, you know, he doesn't come in to score, but he is there to create, and I think it's also a bit frustrating, I think, more that he doesn't even have his first assist yet. So it might work well depending on whether Steve Bruce is going to have him play either in the center. We've seen him play on the right. You know, chopping and changing, I think it only hurts him even more. But I think we shall see. I think now people are rightly so frustrated as to, you know, why he hasn't done anything in a Newcastle shirt in regards to scoring. But you have to remember the situation that the team was in when he first came in and how he's helped that team. But now he really has to demonstrate and kind of win, I guess, a bit more of the fan support.
Yeah. Hi, Roberto. So obviously, you know, Almiron had such a good season last time in the MLS at Atlanta, and, you know, he had such a fantastic partnership with Josef Martínez. Do you think he's the type of player that needs a striker alongside him that he can sort of play off and dance around, or do you think he sort of, you know, needs the sort of the team built around him? How do you think he's going to work best at Newcastle?
I think one of the issues that I always see when I'm watching this team, I think, yes, there is the big advantage in regards to the speed that the team has. And you look at what Almiron brings with that speed. If you look in the transfer window, they did get same accident, and, you know, albeit he is still injured at the moment, you know, we haven't really seen them combine well for a while. You know, with Joe Ellington coming in as well, you don't see that either. So I don't think it's a strike. I don't think it's a combination with the striker per se, but rather the team. I think I just think that looking at him and looking at a player who, you know, provides a bit more of an advantage that is at a speed level and also maybe at a creative level, I think that's where you see some of the issues, whereas, you know, the players surrounding him, maybe with a few exceptions, maybe like a Jonjo Shelvey, or an Isaac Hayden, for example, you see some of that. But I think it's more of a team thing. I think it's rather, you know, because you don't want to fault on just one certain player not combining well. But if you look at Almiron coming in, you know, trying to track back as well in the defense to help out, you know, you see that. So I think it's more of that. I think once, assuming the team plays the way that would best suit him, I think that's when you will see more attack coming from him up front and be more dangerous onto goal, which would obviously be leading to him scoring.
Roberto, one thing that we have heard from some quarters is the language issue, and I just wanted to get your opinion as to whether you think that in Almiron's case, this is something that is kind of a credible argument to make about his form and how he can fit into a formation. Obviously, you know, for the national team, he will have played with Spanish-speaking managers, and then you've had Martino when he's been in the MLS and Rafa Benitez up to now in the Premier League. So Steve Bruce is really his first English-speaking manager, and obviously a bit of an accent as well. But do you think that that's something that is making it more difficult for him? Obviously, as well, he got on very well with the likes of Ayoze Perez last year and Salomon Rondon, who both would have been Spanish speakers for him there. Is that something that, in your opinion, is a credible argument to make about giving him more time to sort of bed in?
I don't think so, because, yes, you have a point there in regards to him being more used to a Spanish-speaking environment. You know, obviously, you know, it even goes even further in Atlanta. You know, he had a Spanish-speaking coach, but he also had Spanish-speaking players. You know, he had Martinez, he had all those other players from Argentina and whatnot. So there is a bit of an advantage, I think, for him to get along very well. Yes, you can also say the same thing for him coming into the Premier League and you know, combining well, I guess, with Rafa and with that language barrier, and as well with Ayoze Perez and Salomon Rondon. But, you know, I think a big quote that I remember from Rondon, from Rafa Benitez when he was trying to speak about the language barrier, you know, he always tried to speak to his players in English. So I don't think that's a reasonable argument, even though if that was the case, then, you know, that claim would have not been, you know, a reasonable one. I don't think it is the language barrier, but yes, it is one to think about. You know, even though he was in the United States for 2 years and now heading into England for now another year, it does seem like a credible factor, but I just don't think it's that. I think, and, you know, speaking to people, you know, close to the camp, he's learning the language, he's doing the best that he can, but he doesn't have a full grasp on it in a way that happens. And it happens. I mean, it happens to a lot of players. I mean, you look at Sergio Aguero, for example, even though that's not really a reasonable comparison, but you look at how many years he's been in England, and, you know, he's not able to at least function and be fluent in the English language in comparison to maybe some of his teammates, like his former teammate, Pablo Zabaleta. So, yeah, it's just some case of just not learning the language and not being, I guess, comfortable with it. But I think it stems a bit more than just that.
Roberto, we know you're an MLS expert, and when Almiron was at Atlanta United, he was absolutely on fire. He was a name that was being spoken about every week. Arsenal were rumoured into him. A lot of European clubs had rumoured interest in him. Obviously, he signed for Newcastle. That was a transfer record at the time. But, you know, it hasn't quite lit up for Almiron yet for Newcastle. But what is the gulf in terms of MLS and the Premier League? Because this is not really being spoken about. Because the MLS, it's improving. We know the growth. You know, people are starting to take it more seriously over here, especially in Europe. But it's still quite a way off from the Premier League. It's no good doing it week in, week out there, because the Premier League is a completely different beast, isn't it? Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely. There's a huge goal. Firstly, you're talking about probably a century-long advantage in regard. Well, you know, the Premier League did start in 1992, but, you know, going way back, whereas, you know, MLS just came in 1996. So you have that huge advantage. And also just in regards to, I guess, there's still kind of a big debate here in regards to what you want to promote. Because, yes, you do have the young American players who maybe are starting off in MLS and then heading off to Europe. You know, you also have this has been a debate for the national team, you know, with those players that joined, you know, have never played in MLS, but are doing well. You know, players like, you know, Christian Pulisic at Chelsea, or Weston McKennie, or Josh Sargent, in playing in Germany. So you have that. I mean, the other big debate here is, you know, you look at the combination that the league has, where you have the so-called youngsters, you know, like a P.T. Martinez, like we don't want to say young, but, you know, in that kind of range in where he's where his his peak is, so their peaks are, you know, like a Joseph Martinez or a Carlos Vela, and then you mix it up with some of the old players that are there, like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, or back then with Wayne Rooney and David Villa, Steven Gerrard. So, yeah, there really is a huge gap, I think, when it comes to the MLS and the Premier League, in a way that you look at the MLS trying to copy the Premier League, you know, in the way that trying to market itself to an American audience that I think is so used to the Premier League, and I think is one of the most popular leagues here in the country, that it does seem like it's not growing. It's being forced rather than growing organically. I think with the time that, and obviously it's growing. I think many people want to always, you know, shut it down in regards that it's not growing. And no, that is completely false. It is growing. It's completely becoming much more popular than it used to be. Listen, I'm 21 right now, so I've experienced how MLS, I've seen it grow since I was a little kid, and from there to now, being an adult, it's grown tremendously. And it's good, because you see that this growth of American soccer is needed, especially now with them going to host the World Cup in about 7 years. You know, that kind of popularity is needed. But there is still that kind of debate in regards to what the talent can use and what the league can do to later produce it into the European leagues. We don't really see it. We haven't seen it back then. We're starting to see it, I guess, on our own, even though it's not really demonstrating it to the fullest. But it will take time. I don't think it should be forced, but I think once it goes on organically, then we'll probably see a much more different MLS.
Roberto, in one word, will Almiron be a success in the Premier League? Well, that's already one sigh. Well, I'm only giving you one word, Roberto.
Yeah.
Perfect, my man. Absolute delight to speak to you. Always insightful. Roberto Rojas there, a South American and MLS football expert. So much knowledge there. We are truly hoping, and the Newcastle fans are praying, that Almiron is a success. Hopefully he will start scoring the goals very soon, now that he is doing at international level. Next, though, it is time for a Newcastle debate.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. Tonight, meant to be joining us was Sean Wade, maybe the glue, the heart of this Newcastle Fan Show. We was worrying. Where was he? We sent out a missing person's call. We gave that number. The phone line was hot. We have got to the bottom of this problem. The man they call Sean Wade, who questions Newcastle players, he questions their commitment, their desire, their effort. Week in, week out on this show, he has shown no effort, commitment or investment to this show because he fell asleep, went for a nap before the show and couldn't make it. Well, he is banned. He will not be coming on the show for the next few weeks. If you're after Sean's dulcet tones, don't bother, because Laurie and Aaron and Jim and Ketch will be leading this Newcastle ship over the next few weeks. Well, we just heard from Roberto Rojas there, a South American football expert, all about Almiron. Will he be a success in the Premier League? He knows him from his time in the MLS, where he was a superstar signing for Newcastle in what was a transfer record fee. Now, though, we're getting to the meat of the show, because it is time for the Newcastle debate. Before we talk about Brighton, the game on the weekend, we'll be previewing that. But I want to ask you two something, because this very week at NUFC360, a very prominent Twitter all about Newcastle, tweeted this Newcastle question, which has sort of kicked off a slight debate. If Newcastle were taken over and renamed Red Bull Newcastle, but they had similar success to Leipzig and Salzburg, would you care or would you be deeply against it? Firstly, I'm going to start with you, Aaron, but reading the replies, they were mixed, but they were generally very against it. But there were some who said, if it brings the success, we need a change anyway. I'm all for it. Aaron, where do you stand?
Yeah, I saw that poll this week, and I've got to admit, I was shocked by the replies, because I assumed clicking on that post, I was just going to see 100 replies saying yes, 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 yes.
Really?
Yeah, 100%, purely because of how much fans are against Mike Ashley and how much they just want. I think they would take anyone.
But at any price, because I've got to be honest, just, and I'm interrupting you because I've asked you the question, but I was expecting every reply saying no, 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 no. Really? So that really shocks me.
No, because for me, from a Newcastle point of view, haven't watched 11 years of Mike Ashley, and how many people have turned away this season, and how, you know, in the summer it was all, you know, it was as if the world was ending. For then, 3 months later, for fans to be like, oh, well, you know what, no, I think we'd just stick with Mike Ashley. It shocked me that more fans weren't pro. I would be for it.
You would be for Red Bull Newcastle?
Yeah, because...
Red Bull Newcastle United?
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is? I think...
I can see it now. This stand gives you wings.
If it's between that and Sports Director Mike Ashley, then I would take it. And I know, you know, people are going to say it's
another sellout,
it's
selling,
isn't it? Your soul. But the way modern football is going is you can't, I don't think in England in the top flight you can have fan-led run clubs and you know, be successful. If you look at Salzburg and Leipzig, both in the Champions League, I bet in 5 years' time if Red Bull took over and Newcastle United were playing Champions League football, there wouldn't be a fan saying no. So... Look, I get why people are against it, but for me, I think if it brings success, then I'm for it.
Well, before I ask Laurie's opinion on it, because as we said, Newcastle fans are split. And firstly, what do you think of it? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 2558, because this is a very hot debate at the minute. But Salzburg, Leipzig, they are hated for the way, you know, they've bought this success. So, you know, I suppose maybe if Newcastle are getting success, the fans won't care if they're hated because, you know, that's the price you pay. But do you want to become that club, almost mercenaries? Laurie, where do you stand on it?
Well, I think in terms of Salzburg and definitely Leipzig, it's slightly different because they weren't top teams prior to the takeover. I'm not saying Newcastle are a top team, but any English football fan can't look at Newcastle and say that we're not a big team, because we are. And if you disagree, then you're bitter and you either support an absolutely massive team or Sunderland or whoever. But I think that's one difference. So the distinction there is that, and also the way that German clubs are owned, for example, is, you know, there's the legalities about how much you're allowed to own as private ownership, and they've almost been seen to bend the rules. But in the Premier League, you've got the likes of Chelsea, first off, back in the day when Roman Abramovich first came in, and then Man City to a much greater extent. And nobody... I mean, actually, this debate weirdly came up a few months ago with Man City fans saying that, you know, if Man City are found majorly in breach of financial fair play, like, does that tarnish having won the league? Does it tarnish Pep Guardiola's reputation as a fantastic coach? And the thing is that nothing is going to take away from that first time Sergio Aguero scored that goal and they won the league. That is an iconic footballing moment. And that's not remembered for how much money was put into the club. That's remembered because... they, you know, because of the football drama that's attached to it. And I think it's very easy for people to be sort of prim and proper and say, oh no, you know, we support a proper football club, we've got to do it the right way. But the Premier League is completely different to the Bundesliga. It's run on money, and if we want to have success, even like the likes of Wolves, how well they did last season, they haven't got where they've got by having a different attitude, having an owner who just believes in. They've had an owner who's invested a lot of money. They've had an extremely successful relationship with a super agent who's managed to get them these top players. And you're just kidding yourself if you think that as a Newcastle fan, if we were successful, that you would say, no, I don't want that because it's been given to us by money.
But is that success short-sighted? Because yes, you want success. You're talking about Wolves and other clubs who've done it the right way, they've invested, but there is a price. You don't want to go from one bad owner, which is what this movement's been about, what this boycott's been about. You feel disenfranchised from Mike Ashley in the club, the way he's running things, he's treating it like a business, you know, to then going, yeah, we would do it. Of course Newcastle want investment. Of course they want success. Of course they want to be in the Champions League. But you're saying you want that at a price of them being... renamed to Red Bull Newcastle, because I thought it was about, and I know we all want everything and we can't have our cake and eat it, but you don't want to lose, you know, the community, the fans. This is what you're boycotting over, that you're losing that identity of the club. You're not saying the price is we don't mind becoming another identity and falling into another trapdoor of a potentially just as bad owner.
I get the point, and I know obviously when you know, people that are against this type of ownership see the Red Bull name in front of it, they think, oh, well, that team's sold out.
RBNUFC.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously in Germany and Austria, where a lot of football clubs are fan-led, and, you know, that is why there was so much uproar. But like I said before, in England now, where it's all, you know, run by money, you know, for me, Manchester City and Chelsea and all the money they've had in, it's exactly the same. It's just that they haven't had their club branded in the same way as Red Bull. Now, Mike Ashley tried to change the stadium, you know, to the Sports Direct Arena, and it lasted, what, all of 2 years? Because to everybody, that was still St James's Park. And I think if, you know, obviously, it's probably never going to happen, but if it did, and it was then, you know, Red Bull, Newcastle United, to Newcastle United fans, it is always going to be Newcastle United. You know, the outsiders might look at it and say, oh, you know, you've sold your soul, but there's still going to be 52,000 there supporting that team. We're going to have an owner that's not like Ashley. You know, we're going to have proper facilities for a change, you know. So for me, the positives outweigh the negatives of having a sort of that bad sort of PR, you know, sort of image.
I think they do outweigh the negatives. But, you know, obviously, I genuinely feel like a lot of people have a soft spot for Newcastle. I think everyone wants to see them do well. They understand the plight they're in with that owner. I think the moment you do that, people will take away that, you know, that sympathy, that empathy for the club, because people are like, well, you know, this is what they were moaning about. This is what they were boycotting over. Now they're Red Bull Newcastle. And you say about Man City and Chelsea, they haven't been rebranded. This is the argument here. If the question is, do Newcastle want investment in a new owner? It's not really a talking point. Yes, of course they do. But it's the whole rebranding thing. To me, I think that no matter how badly I want investment, I would never want to pay that price. And are you two both saying that at that price, then you would, Laurie?
Well, I think...
I know it's a tricky spot for you both, by the way. So
I think part of the thing of what you're missing is, in Newcastle United fans' mind, part of the identity of the club, and especially for me, is ambition and wanting to play attacking football and wanting to win. And because, you know, historically, you know, when you look at the 1990s, the way our team was playing, and I remember from being a kid going to watch Newcastle in the Champions League, one of the reasons that Mike Ashley is so frustrating is because he doesn't have ambition for the football club. Now, that's putting the Sports Direct thing to one side, and it is disgraceful the way Mike Ashley has used Newcastle United, largely without the club being compensated, to plaster his company all over it. But for me, that's slightly different to what the case would be with Red Bull. All these teams, Man United, look at their deal with Chevrolet. Like, look, you know, you're always going to have shirt sponsors. And to be honest, I think if there were a few Red Bull logos around the stadium, as much as it's not completely savoury, I think fans now, especially as they got used to it, would understand that that's modern football. I mean, Manchester City's stadium is called the Etihad. Obviously, it's nowhere near as historic a stadium as St James's Park. I also personally think it wouldn't necessarily be the case that everything would be rebranded, because St James's Park, in its own right, I think is quite a successful marketing name. You know, it's very well known, probably across Europe. So,
but as a team name, Red Bull Newcastle, surely, yeah, that's just... Because I know we're talking, you're saying, hypothetically, I don't think they would change the team name. They shouldn't. They should have never changed it to Sports Direct Arena, which I would never, ever call it in my life. It's St James's Park, St James's Park only. But we're saying, if they do rebrand, you don't mind being called Red Bull Newcastle. You look at that table, oh, there's so-and-so, there, and there's Red Bull Newcastle.
Well, I just think the thing is, as Aaron said, I think all the fans would still call it United. It would be Newcastle United. That's the club. You know, it's not like Milton Keynes moving. You know, it's not the same quite.
But I think it's not the fans, but it's hard. I say when we allow this, because you said it's the way modern football is. If we keep giving into it, then everyone's identity is losing, because the actual football, you know, it's being lost, isn't it? Because the soul is being truly ripped out from it, not just of Newcastle, from everywhere, because then every club might as well rebrand. Stadiums we've known and gone to as kids, nostalgia, it's all being lost, because now it is. And I know you, in the hearts of the Newcastle fans, will say, no, this is Newcastle United. This is St James's Park, but it's still on the outskirts. You know, kids who are now growing up in a new generation, they go, oh, we're called Newcastle. They go, no, we're not. It's Red Bull Newcastle, you know, and it slowly wanes off, doesn't it, Aaron?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that is why German football is so special, and you know, countries like that where they are trying to keep it as, you know,
as sort pure as possible.
Pure and grassroots and fan-orientated and fan-led and fan-driven. But when you look at England and the Premier League and the, you know, the biggest league in the world, and like you say, the sponsors now and all that, yes, it's all well and good saying, you know, we're going to try fight it and we're going to try, but I think it is going to get to a point where it is other teams will be going down that route, and not just getting called Red Bull, but there's going to be, you know, different caveats put on the names. And for me, the final thing I just want to say is that, you know, when you've got Everton and Southampton and Bournemouth and, you know, lower clubs in Newcastle, with these very swanky, you know, facilities behind the scenes, and you've got Newcastle players in paddling pools and wheelie bins outside, you know, worrying about getting frostbite and verrucas. The downside of having Red Bull in front of Newcastle but having a ownership that wants to take us on would outweigh, you know, the negatives of it for me. So,
well, I understand, because, you know, you're desperate and crying out for an owner, and you should have one that wants to be ambitious with Newcastle and carry them further rather than caring about your own brand. I completely stand with you on that and understand you. We have to turn our attentions to the game on the weekend, Newcastle versus Brighton. This debate could rage on because there is so many different factors to it. You can still have your view in it and your say. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 2558. Next, though, we're talking to Brian Owen all about Brighton.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Kellis. I can assure you the debate raged on. Is it Red Bull Newcastle? Is it Newcastle United? Where do you stand? So many different opinions on this one. And also, if you're not a Newcastle fan and you're listening, what about if it was your club? What would you want to happen? Do you want that ambition? You want Champions League or no rebrand? We know who we are. I don't care if we drop down the lower leagues. It's a very interesting talking point. But we do have to now talk to Brian Owen, sports reporter for the Argos, because he is giving us our opposition view. It's Newcastle versus Brighton this weekend in what is a massive game, even if the Premier League is in the early stages. Brian, thank you for joining us. How are Brighton feeling about the game on the weekend?
I think they could do performances. I heard one of your colleagues there earlier on saying that Brighton have had some results. They haven't really had the results. They've had some decent performances. So I think a point or three would just reassure people a little bit, because they're playing some nice football. But and it's mainly at home. They've dropped points at home that they shouldn't have done. Away, they've won 3-0 at Watford and lost at Man City. So that's probably a bit above par. But there's been a lot of frustration at home. So I guess, you know, a result up at Newcastle would be quite reassuring. But as you say, it is really early days and it is very easy to overstate these matches.
It has been an indifferent start, Brian, but let's go back to the opening day. It was a brilliant 3-0 win against Watford. You know, no one was expecting Brighton to win that game in that style or even win that game. Many were predicting Brighton for relegation. Then all of a sudden, the fickle fans, we all come out and go, oh, that was a good appointment, Graham Potter. You know, Brighton could do well this year. They play good football. It hasn't been the same then, but did the Brighton fans, did the consensus change? Did they go, oh, we could achieve something this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it started a couple of weeks before that in pre-season. They switched to a sort of 3-4-3 system. I know you can't tell much from results, but I sort of think they did look quite good. They had a win at Birmingham, they beat Valencia. I always think the last friendly is maybe one where you can get a little indication. I think some optimism going to Watford, but obviously you didn't expect to win 3-0. And that result there possibly flattered them. By contrast, they played some really good stuff at home to West Ham, squandered some chances and only drew 1-1. And I think the result, which has probably brought people right down to earth, was when they lost 2-0 at home to Southampton. Again, having played some nice stuff and started well and then had a player sent off after half an hour. So, it was a nice surprise. Of course it was. It's the only game they've won since March the 9th. So people did enjoy it, but it's been a little bit back to reality since then.
I just wanted to ask you about, we've been talking a lot about ambition today on the show from our club, and
yeah,
it's hard. I mean, I'm looking at Brighton this season and Graham Potter seems to be a really good appointment. You know, he did really well at Swansea, and I would, you know, I would have been far more excited about having someone like him than I obviously am about having Steve Bruce. But on the flip side of that, you've got things like selling Anthony Knockaert to a championship side. And it just doesn't seem to all be pushing in the same direction. So are you, obviously, off the back of Houghton managing to keep you up and then going and Graham Potter being appointed, are you happy with the way that the sort of direction that your team's going in? And from your point of view, where do you sort of stand in comparison to Newcastle this season?
It's an interesting one. And I think it's sort of, wait and see in a way. I mean, there was a, you obviously know Chris Hughton well, and he did an amazing job for about 3 years at Brighton, but there was a feeling towards the end of last season that there was a bit of a need for a change and probably more attractive football. Knockout, there's been some surprising departures. There's been Shane Duffy, who was left out for a match. So we were told not a summer of big change, and bit by bit, the change has grown and grown. So I think it's really a wait and see period, you know, at the moment. But as I say, the football's been a lot different. People have enjoyed it. They've been clapped off the pitch 3 times at the Amex, but they've failed to win 3 times at the Amex. So I like what they're trying to do. Tony Bloom has got a very good record in managerial appointments. At the moment, I'm towards having faith and thinking it's probably going the right way, but patience, if that exists, which I think does with Tony Bloom to a degree.
I've spoke to you know people that follow Brighton closely, and they say that as you've touched on, you know, a couple of times, the football's been so much better already under Hughton, and you know, even yeah. against Man City, when you know maybe the scoreline didn't reflect it, but there was actually some good football on show. Do you think that, you know, give Potter another couple of, you know, month or two with this new set of players, that Brighton can really sort of push on and not just be a club where, you know, they're just sort of trying to survive, they're one, playing good football, and two, sort of pushing up the table?
I think so. I think more importantly, the chairman, the owner, Tony Bloom, is absolutely convinced they are. He's spoken about them being a top 10 club on a regular basis. Not from this season, but a fairly long-term ambition. He said that at a fans forum sort of just before the season started. And I thought people sort of laughed and smiled and thought, yes. But, you know, back in the League One days with Dean, and we were sort of dreaming of Brighton being in the top half of the Championship, playing in front of 18, 20,000. And he was thinking Premier League in front of 30. So I just wouldn't... I think he's the man whose vision counts, and that's his sort of long-term vision. Let's see if they can stabilise. Let's see if Potter can... He'll bring a few more players in. I'm sure he'll get different players playing in different ways. It's such early days for him. But it's a progressive club. There's obviously Dan Ashworth here off the pitch. There's a lot of good appointments. There's loads of good stuff going on around the club. Why not? I think the last decade has taught us to believe sort of almost anything is possible.
Brian, I just want to ask you how you kind of approach games in Newcastle and what your expectations are, because obviously prior to when we had that season in the Championship, we had a couple of disappointing cup results when yous were below us. But then obviously in that Championship season, you ended up bottling it and we won the league. So I'm just wondering, is Newcastle a fixture where you look forward to playing us or not?
Not any more than any other teams. I mean, they've had a couple of good results up on Tyneside, haven't they, the last two visits. I wouldn't say that it particularly stands out. So I remember those fixtures, and I can remember coming up towards at the start of that promotion season, and Newcastle won 2-0, and I thought there's only one promotion place available this season. You know, Newcastle, you know, go steaming ahead. So I was quite surprised that it ended up that close in the end that season, and obviously they were very disappointed not to win the title. I think that feels like a long time ago now. I think you look at it as one of you touched on earlier. It's just a big game because it's one of those clubs you would have thought might be around each other come the end of the season. And I think it's a good chance. It is a chance for Brighton to go out there and get something.
Well, Brian, I have to put you on the spot very quickly. What is your score prediction for the weekend?
Ooh, what am I going to say? I'll say that something could be a 2-2.
2-2, sitting on the fence there, Brian, but always a pleasure to talk to you. Brian Owen there, sports reporter for the Argus. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll quickly throw it over to you two. What is your score prediction for the weekend, Aaron?
Based on the last two performances at home, I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1. Two draws in the prediction so far. Laurie, you going to break it?
Yeah, 1-0 to Newcastle.
1-0 to Newcastle. Well, this has been the Newcastle Fan Show. Laurie has tipped it in Newcastle's favour. He sang 1-0. The majority was draw. We've covered a lot this evening, but it is a massive game. Brighton on the weekend. We will be here next week to talk all about it on the Newcastle Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.